This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
We are indeed talking cravings, and we are talking beer. Hello, Pete Dillon with you. Football finals have started. It's that crazy month in Melbourne where everybody is pledges allegiance to a particular bunch of blokes kicking a bag of wind around the paddock. Many of you know my allegiance, and I thought one thing that talks footy finals to me is beer. We are going a little more highbrow and talking about craft beer rather than Carlton Draft, which is not by any means an ad, because that's what I'll be drinking tonight at the MCG when I'm there to see North Melbourne smack Essendon. Right, we've done it. It's out. So I need to welcome my three guests. The first is a man who has a blog and a podcast. He is quite a passionate fan of the brewed ale. His name is Luke Roberts. Luke, welcome.
Hey there, how's it going?
Good, thank you. Ale Over Time is your product?
Yes, correct.
How did you get interested in beer? Stupid question.
I guess, like everyone else, started drinking beer, but I was actually studying social media part-time and had to start a blog.
How do you start social media? Study social media part-time.
It might have been internet.
Does that mean you got a Twitter account?
Pretty much.
Yeah, cool. Yeah.
Part of the course was getting a Twitter and a blog, and yes. I thought, why not make it about beer? And it turns
out... reasonable as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it turned out to be a lot of fun, so I just stopped studying and focused on beer.
Excellent. Also in this studio is Eric Mills. He is from Moondog Brewing.
How's it going?
Good, thank you. Moondog Brewing, a Melbourne boutique craft beer.
Yes, indeed. Yes. So Moondog Brewing got set up by a couple of brothers and a friend from high school about 3 years ago.
Yep.
And it's been trucking along since then.
And there is a stack of beer. There's like loads of them that are Moondog beers.
Lots of sort of off-center styles. We make a lot of beers that challenge the average palate. We get a pretty mixed response to some of our beers.
Indeed. I think the most interesting beer I ever tasted was a beer that tastes like smoked ham. I believe it came out of Europe somewhere. The young fellow you might know by the name of Chris Minichelli, who runs Slow Beer on Swan Street in Richmond. Bridge Road. Bought in a beer that tastes like smoked ham. I think it was the finest thing I'd ever tasted.
It would have been a German Rauch beer, I'd imagine.
That's exactly what it was. Phenomenal stuff. I want beer that tastes like ham all the time. If only you can make beer that tastes like bacon, I would be a very happy man. As I'm sure would be my third guest, he is originally from Toronto. You'll pick up an accent. He's North American. He's not American. He's North American. Let's be very specific about that. His name is Dan John. He's from Forrester's Beer and Music Hall. Welcome.
Yes, thank you for having me.
For those that don't know, this is a new venue that's opened, a couple of days ago?
Yes, it opened last Thursday. It's on 64th Smith Street in Collingwood.
Yes.
Yeah, the old bar
called Barry.
The
last time you mentioned that address before I get thrown off air. In the premises that was known as a bar called Barry, and what was it called before that? I'm going to test your knowledge.
Oh, it was a top comedic talent, The Last Laugh, and then before that it was Training for Circus Oz.
Excellent. He has done his research. I'm very happy about that. So you all collectively have an association with beer, from an organisation that makes it to someone who sells it and then somebody who comments on it. Luke, I'm going to start with you. The rise and rise of craft beer over the last probably 5 or 10 years in Australia has been phenomenal. Will craft beer, in your humble opinion, ever overtake commercially produced beer from the big players?
I don't think so.
You hope so.
Well, I think there's still a place for both. I think eventually, in maybe 5, 10 years, the end game's going to be equal footing. You're going to see, you know, Carlton Draft next door to Moondog. Well, they are geographically, I guess, but also on the taps, it's just going to end up on par. People are still going to want to have a regular beer at the end of the day.
A question for all of you. Any of you can jump in and answer this. We've seen what starters craft organisations grow into, sort of, you know, some of the way that sits between those very highly commercial organisations like the Foster's Group and the beers they produce, and the smaller craft sort of factory, small factory stuff. And that's the, I'm thinking of places like Coldstream that started as a small batch producer and now is sort of quite a large producer. Where does the line stop between being a craft beer and when it becomes something that's more commercially available, ergo it's no longer craft? Is there a distinction?
It's a hotly debated topic. There are people are trying to put in sort of parameters to define what is craft and what isn't, but it's a touchy subject because, I mean, you know, is it based on the ingredients? Is it based on the size?
Sales and how much of the product's being sold? Does it still have that craft thing, I guess?
People base it on an emotional idea rather than actually a physical sort of, you know, volume or anything. It's really hard to define.
It's probably a very grey area. Dan, weigh in.
Well, the way I look at it is you can't take a craft or something that away from someone based on sales or success. Like Eric was saying, it comes down to the passion and the people behind the business. So if you,
which is very hard to quantify, of course.
Well, it is. Well, it's like taking a small independent music producer or artist who does achieve commercial success on the back of a song. Who's the bloke? Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Probably a good example of somebody who was nobody had ever heard of, had been an indie producer, created an album, song went nuts, parodied across the world. Is he still an indie recording artist, or is he in fact a global superstar? I mean, that's the analogy I'm trying to make.
It's an interesting one. Some of the breweries in the States that are still considered craft breweries would be much bigger than the local Carlton Draft. You know, they're producing millions of barrels a year, and they're still within the parameters, whereas Carlton Draft wouldn't be within the parameters. So I think...
No, I won't.
Basically, I don't like the word craft. I think it should just be down to, is it a good beer or not? And let everything... Like, I don't care who
but
made
look,
it.
It's probably the same if we can use the wine industry as a similar analogy, and it's probably far more similar than a performer. There are still wineries who are considered boutique, and in spirits companies that are boutique distillers. That's not to say that they're not achieving commercial success and they're not playing in the same game as larger multinationally backed companies. So it is a bit of a grey area. And so Eric Mills is here. He is from Moondog Brewing. Moondog Brewing or Brewery?
Not whichever you prefer.
Well, I'm hoping that your business has got a name.
The website is Moondog Brewing, but right. Moondog Brewery.
Moondog Brewery. And so you mentioned at the top of the discussion we were having with you that you have some regular beers, which are your Moondog Love Tap and your Moondog Jukebox Hero.
Yes.
What are some of the more unusual beers that you are producing, and what, again, we're going to sort of go down that craft discussion again, what makes a beer unusual or different to the basic ingredients, which generally are, correct me if I'm wrong, water, barley or some sort of grain, hops, bugger all else, a bit of sugar.
Yeast.
That's
very
right.
Important.
Yeast, the thing that turns it into alcohol, Pete. Yes. So those four ingredients make up beer. What else can become a part of beer?
That's sort of the thing with beer, is there's really no limits. You can do whatever you want with it. There's a beer sitting in front of you there, which is a...
which I won't drink.
Of course not right now.
But there is real beer in here, and it's got a lid on it. For anyone who's listening in the technological department, it has a lid on it.
So that particular beer is Black Lung 4. We've done that four times. Now it's a smoky stout. We use a certain portion of peated malt, so it's that smell like an Isla whiskey, and we barrel age that in virgin American oak.
Good lord, that's a very technical. I'm just looking at the back of the label. So you've got Magnum hops, which is a proprietary hops.
Yes,
I've already got it in there. 16 minutes in, bloody marvelous.
Well done.
A Belgian Abbey yeast,
yep,
and an American ale yeast. Are they two different yeasts?
They are two different.
What do the two different yeasts contribute to this particular beverage?
To that particular beverage, well, a variety of different sort of fennels and aromas and just a lot of it, really. But the yeasts aren't the main champion of that beer, the hero.
I'm assuming it's these six ingredients under malt.
Yes, that's right. There's a massive malt bill, and a big part of that being the peated malt. It's only got a small amount of peated barley because it's such a strong, smoky aroma.
So if I was to rip the cork, the lid off that, the ground seal, and have a bit of a slurp, what's it going to taste like?
Well, why don't you find out?
Well, no, I can't, because if I have an open bottle in this studio, somebody will castigate me very severely and I'll get a sternly worded email.
You'll start off with the nose, the smell, the colour, it's really dark. It's a very black beer. You won't be able to see
it. So the colour of a stout?
Yes, the colour of a very, very big stout. It's a 9.1% stout, so it's huge.
Crikey, so it's going to knock your pants off if you have two or three.
And the aroma straight up will be smoke. It'll smell like that really peaty Islay whiskey. And that's what will hit you as it warms up. The other malts will start to come through, and you'll get a whole variety of different toasty sort of flavours and different things going on there. But that smoke is really up front, and it mellows out as you drink it.
Typically for me, when I'm talking about beverages that have particularly strong characteristics, what am I going to have with that beverage as a food match that's going to make it work?
Well, like all sort of food and drink matches, you want to either complement it or contrast it.
Correct.
I guess with that, I'd certainly like to have some cured meats with it, you know, something sort of big and, you know, you were talking before about the rauk beer and the ham. Mm. If you can't get the flavour from inside the beer, why not just
compliment it with something. So one of the big things that's coming out of the United States as a food trend and starting to infiltrate its way into the way we eat is barbecue and grilling in a very big way. You know, we used to throw a snag on a flat grill and we thought that was a barbecue.
And now we're 12-hour slow roasting smoking things.
And if anybody would like to, he's in their car and he's heading somewhere, head down to Federation Square, because there is the Vic 100 Wine Awards. We talked about them last Saturday with Nick Stock. Those Vic 100 Wine Awards, they've got a smoker down there and not somebody on the end of Peter Jackson. They've actually got a smoking arrangement with smoked meats to go down and be something to have with some wine. So get down to Federation Square. I'm sure they'll let you in the door if you give them some money. Sorry, going back to that beer and that match, it's interesting. I want to bring you into the discussion here, Dan, and as well, Luke. You guys, you have you run a beer and music hall.
Correct.
Would you throw something like that on your menu?
I currently have it on tap, so I'd have to say yes.
Oh, there we go.
Easy answer.
That's why you boys smiled at one another when you both walked into the building a little while ago.
A little handshake at the door, yeah.
So tell me your opinion of this beer.
From my opinion,
Eric, he's got a biased opinion.
I'm going to base the opinion off the brewery in general. We carry obviously a wide range of beers, so you have your
session. So how many beers have you got? You've got 50 taps with 32 different beers from across the globe.
Correct. So then I have 8 regular beers from across Australia and 32 different beers in total. So right now we have beers from Denmark, Australia, America, Italy. We have a very wide range. Yes.
Well, you've only opened a week, so I should imagine they're not going to change in a hurry.
What's that? Last night we changed over 9 kegs, so they rotate. So the bottom, once we get to the end of the keg, we bring on something brand new.
So you never know what's going to be on your beer list.
Right, so that's what attracts the beer lovers, so they can come in every day and try something new.
That's a very good thing. Luke, I imagine you'll be spending quite a bit of time in this venue.
Yeah, I'm yet to go, but I'm actually quite keen to check it out.
It's only a week old, don't worry. Let the wankers go first. Yeah. Going after the first
I'm probably one of those people that...
The fact that it's open until 4 a.m. as well is...
So you've got a 4 a.m. license?
I do have a 4 a.m. license. So we do get a nice hospitality crowd in at the end of the night. So we had some nice and rock and roll tunes going last night, good hospitality crowd and some good beer. So it was fun.
Sounds like a very interesting place to be at a very late hour of the morning, and at least I know somewhere I can go after 1 o'clock and get a drink. The lockout system is eventually going to come into play. So if it's post 1 a.m. and people need to get in and we're under a lockout system where people can't, how is that going to affect the venue with a license that runs till 4?
So I believe that will just stay the same. Like, we're going to keep the license from now on. Obviously, with the council, that stuff comes into play later. We haven't been told. We haven't been scolded in that remarks yet.
Yep.
From as far as I know, the 4 a.m. license will stay. And if you walk in at 3:55... the doors will still be open.
So you're not going to get a lot of sleep, are you?
No, I was there until 6 a.m. last night. Or
6 a.m.
this morning.
That's 6 hours ago.
Yes, no.
Thank you
great.
For turning up and being in this studio.
Welcome,
I'm very, very impressed.
It's my pleasure, yeah.
So let's jump back to Moondog for a minute. How do you guys get your product to Dan? How do you get discovered when you are craft, when you are to some extent outside the sphere of consciousness when it comes to...
Moondog now has the luxury of having quite a big following in the craft beer world.
Mm-hmm.
Craft beer nerds love us, and it's a wonderful symbiotic relationship. They promote our product. And
Luke, do you like being called a craft beer nerd?
Oh, I've been called a lot worse, so yeah.
I say it as a compliment.
Yes, so. Of course you do.
There's not really any other word for it. Like,
no.
We are
aficionado,
nerdy.
Connoisseur.
People in the States, you know, chase trucks around. to get beers as soon as they're released. It's a pretty nerdy pursuit. So.
People in the US also chase storms.
That's true.
Let's not use the US as our barometer of common sense, shall we? We could end up in all sorts of trouble. So I'll go back to you to let you finish about, you know, where people find you and how people like Dan discover you and people like Luke discover you and sort of does yeah, is sure. Luke responsible to, in making Moondog what it is because of blogs and that sort of thing?
We owe a lot of our our fan base to those kind of blogs and, you know, what the craft beer nerds do for us. They let everyone know we exist. They
say we'll stick with CBNs things. Just as a point of reference. A non-offensive point of reference. Yes. CBN, I'm writing that down.
I think within that craft beer nerd spectrum, there is there's a lot to see.
In every spectrum, there are always extremes. But, religion, but, politics, good places.
Look, they're the sort of bread and butter. They're the people who kind of can't keep on supporting you when we say we're releasing a new beer. They're the people that are lining up to buy it first, and without them we wouldn't have the sort of coverage and exposure we do. But on top of that, we want to really sort of target people who everyday drinkers. The Love Tap, the pale lager, it's a pretty easy drinking beer. It's targeted to people who don't
drink a lot of beer. Hello,
well,
target
yeah,
at me.
Yeah, yeah.
I would, a lighter style of beer.
Yes, well, I'll bring one in next time.
That's quite all right, though. They will go in the fridge with all of the other craft beers, and eventually we will have a housewarming in a couple of weeks, and somebody will come and go, oh, my God, I love that stuff, and just drink it. It's great. I want to come back and sort of talk about, well, what is your role at Moondog, first of all?
So my role at Moondog is I came on board there about 5 months ago to set up the bar. We have a bar at the brewery and ongoing sales as well. I've been involved with the guys for quite a long time in my previous role, running a pub owned by the same guy who owns Forrester's Hall.
Right.
So that's a lot of connections. It's terribly incestuous,
this beer world, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It's very much so. Everyone knows everyone and they're all very friendly. It's a wonderful environment to work in.
Good, good. Dan, we've got a couple of minutes. I want to sort of do a quick chart of your career. How did you end up in Melbourne running a beer and music hall? What's been the journey?
So I finished school back in Toronto. I worked for a local brewery back in Toronto. Decided after I'd finished my master's program to travel to Australia with my girlfriend.
What's your master's in?
English, as you
Excellent.
Can see.
Excellent.
Yes. Then I happened to stumble upon the Terminus Hotel in Fitzroy North.
Yes, as many people have and still occasionally stumble out
some occasions. Met some of the most lovely people I've ever met in my entire life. The craft beer world kind of took me in, and I was offered this incredible position to run Forrester's Hall.
Yep. So I'm assuming you're talking about people like Paul Allison and Stephen.
Correct, yeah.
Who are...
The Griggs family have put their heart and soul into the craft beer world with the Royston, the Terminus, obviously with culminating with the best pub in Melbourne through the Herald Sun and Time Out magazine.
Yep.
They've been at this for a long time, and they were recognized this year. It was nice to be a part of that for a short time.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. And they were behind a bar called Barry, so this is just a refit for them.
Correct, yeah. So they've been a part of or in this building for about 15 years. So this refit, it took some time, but Rome wasn't built in a day.
No, it was not. Mm-hmm. Musically, so we'll come back and talk about the music in a little bit, but we're talking a lot about beer. What's the music component of the musical?
Rockabilly, jazz, blues. We have this beautiful golden clamshell that sits above the crowd. It lights up. The people light up. It's just an incredible atmosphere. So
sounds magnificent, and I have to be there in a minute. In the studio, I have three guests that I have incorrectly introduced. Dan Johnston is his name, not Dan John. He is the man with the North American accent. Eric Miles, who I've been calling Eric Mills for the last half an hour. I do humbly apologise.
No problem.
I did incorrectly have Luke Roberts as Luke McDonald. Thankfully, we got to Luke Roberts before we went to air, so I look less of a twit than I already do. They are all here to talk about beer. Your podcasts, Luke, let's give them a little bit of a run. So with part of the blog idea was to create a podcast as well. And
That came a bit later. Mm-hmm. I was listening to some podcasts, other Australia, New Zealand beer ones, and there was only like two, and they...
would have taken up all of your time.
Yeah, and I kind of got to the end and thought, I enjoy listening to it, but I reckon I could do better. So I tried, and it turned out to be enjoyable, so we kept on at it.
Excellent. So how many podcasts do exist, and are they available via iTunes?
Yep, you can find us on iTunes or just straight from my site. I think we're about 20 episodes in now, with a few sort of bonus episodes with interviews from brewers around the world. All sorts of content. We try to make it
So you're the beer version of this program.
Basically, I think.
need to get yourself a radio station. Yeah. Of course, don't forget you can go to joy.org.au and look at any of our programs, and almost all of which now have podcasts, now that we're talking about podcasts. Good opportunity for an ad, including podcasts from this program. And I do need to say thank you to my podcasters who happily do all of the technical stuff that I can't do and bring it to you if you miss a show. Sorry, back to you. So is it just yourself or are there people with you?
No, I've got a co-host, Dave Alice, who is another, I guess, person like me that just...
Another CBN?
Yep, talking about beer. And we quite often we'll try and get a guest each week, or we'll go out and about and chat to someone. I was over in Wellington chatting to some New Zealand brewers last week and put them up as well.
That hasn't created that funny accent you've got, has it?
I'm originally from New Zealand, yep.
as long as it wasn't that trip to Windy Wellington.
No, it wouldn't be that quick.
Be anybody's undoing. Eric, how did you get into this business? How did hospitality and beer choose you?
Well, it just happened quite organically, really. I've been involved in hospitality for about 12, 13 years. That is sort of...
You look far too young.
..a job that I needed. No, oh, thank you. And then I just fell in love with it, and I started drinking different beers. I remember when I first started drinking beer as a young 13, 14-year-old, and my brother gave...
18-year-old, yeah.
Oh, I beg your pardon. Sorry, yes, yeah. My older brother gave me some sage advice. He said, no one enjoys their first beer, but you drink through it and enjoy it eventually. And I'm now discovering that's not the case.
No, it's not, because my first beer was Foster's Lager.
Yeah, mine was probably something very similar. I just fell in love with the different beers that were starting to come out 10 years ago, and then since then, the options are wide and varied, and I got involved with Moondog, as I was saying, through being involved with the Royston for 7 years, which was one of the sort of earlier craft beer-centric pubs in Melbourne, and Russell and the Griggs family have done great things for craft beer, I think.
Excellent.
And then through that, I was involved with Moondog through buying beer, and I've been working there for the last sort of 5 months, just loving it. It's something that it's close to my heart, and it's less of a job than just fun, really. We have a lot of fun.
Well, if you love your job, it's not a job. It's not work.
I'm sorry,
Dan, would you agree? You're sitting there nodding your head.
Yeah, completely agree. The hours and the atmosphere have just been, they've been long, but they've been very rewarding. You go home buzzing every night, which is very nice.
I want to talk about the hours, because people would say that hospitality, it's a difficult business, that, your social life is curbed. I would wholeheartedly disagree for the fact that most of your friends come from the same industry that you are in, because you share similar interests by virtue of being mates. So you would do your socializing at a different time than others would.
Certainly. I have a house party with 400 of my friends in almost every night, which is wonderful.
Well, who can complain about that? The craft, we're talking about the sort of the growth of the craft beer industry here in Australia. Would you liken it to what's happened in North America? Did it happen earlier? Is it a similar sort of thing? Because North America is dominated, particularly Canadian-American border in the northeast, dominated by some of the biggest breweries in the world.
So that's a very good point. Obviously, the U.S. hit off a lot earlier, and when they hit off, they absolutely took off. Mm-hmm. Being the little brother of the U.S., we took that on as well.
And followed
we
quickly.
Grew and we multiplied. We had 6 or 7 craft breweries in Ontario, and by the end of the year, we had 330. The brewery I worked for had 3 beers on tap and went to 27 within the year. And then when I came here, even within the time, I could just see the excitement, see the people, see the passion in Melbourne, which is just wonderful.
What's different to the way that the Americans developed craft beer? Well, not developed, but sort of massaged craft beer. Craft beer, I would suggest, came from Europe. And it's been craft beer in Europe for about 600 years. What do we do differently than North America? And I'll use all of North America, because that's your point of reference.
Well, North American beers have that, other than the craft breweries, of course, they resemble a lot of water.
They're hideous.
They're very light, very unflavorful, and that's something that people want to change now.
And they've got no booze in them. Americans can't handle beer. I don't know if you've ever sat at a bar with an American in America and drank beer. They are absolute lightweights.
That's a big call.
Well, every experience that I have had in America drinking beer at a bar with Americans...
Maybe that says more about you than the Americans.
Maybe. Maybe it does.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the great things about beer. Beer, in my opinion, matches much more finely with food. Mm-hmm. So with these flavor profiles that you get from these hops and these different things like Eric is adding into his beers, you can use them in any style restaurant. whether it be a local pub to pub food to your three hat restaurant. And people are starting to turn onto that. These beer lists at these restaurants are starting to increase and complement the food rather than you walk in and there's 40 different wine bottles and
two
different beers.
That was about to be my question. Do we treat beers with similar reverence that we do to wine? Are there enough beers on lists to complement food as there are wines, or a wine list too wine heavy? There's a lot of discussion in the industry at the minute, in the wine industry, between people like Hugh and Hook and others, and sommeliers in Melbourne who are saying that, you know, some of the wine writers are saying these wine lists are trying to be too clever, trying to be too obscure, finding, you know, these really obscure wines from around the world that nobody's ever heard of, so therefore don't really know how to drink them. Is there a similar thing in beer, or do we need more beer on wine lists? End of.
We need more education about the beers. It's one thing just to put a beer on the list, but that won't move. You put the, you know, 9.1% smoky barrel-aged stout on a list and the staff don't know about it. Yeah, if it's not explained, they won't know. And then you have things like sour beers and wild ales that are these challenging flavours that people aren't expecting from a beer. And if they're not explained properly, people go, well, that's rubbish. And
so the next question is, do we educate sommeliers enough about beer?
Well, we're starting to. Mm. We're starting to. I mean, the term beer sommelier now exists. Which
I can kid you not, there is a, in Los Angeles, there is a water sommelier at a restaurant.
Wow.
Who, I'm not kidding. I swear this is a con, but he is a well-known water sommelier, and he travels the world as a sommelier of water.
That's advising extra on level.
Well, yeah. You know, you're going to get a bottle of water that might have a slightly higher alkaline rather than pH neutral thing about it by virtue of the limestone or the place where it comes from, you know, harvested by nubile virgins in the mountains of Slovakia. I think you're going to the right point that we probably need to educate not just the sommelier, but we need to educate consumers more about what craft beer is compared to, you know, you talk beer and people think, oh God, I've got to drink VB again. Luke, would you be one of those people who would be driving that charge?
Yeah, definitely. It's something that I like to get on board with and sort of push restaurants to get really thoughtful with their beer lists. Quite often, as you guys alluded to, that there's 40 bottles of wine and you get two lagers at the end and that's a beer list. And now they're increasing and getting more beers on their list, but they're not very well thought out. You know, you go to a restaurant and you're like, oh great, these are local, well-made beers, but they don't really go with the food. You kind of...
And then that's where we need to start bringing chefs into the conversation.
Definitely.
As well. And it's not
exactly.
Just something that we have after work. We did have a message from Tristan, thank you, who's listening. He's in Wheelers Hill. He said, where can I taste beers from all around the world in Melbourne? I think that I am the least qualified person to answer that question. Luke, where would you go to get a sampling of beers from around the world and get an understanding of the differences and the nuances and all of that?
Other than the obvious Foresters that we've been discussing.
Okay, Foresters Beer and Music Hall.
The sort of the home has kind of always been the local tap house in St Kilda.
Yep.
They've got 20 different taps. They're rotating. You can buy flights of beer, so you get 5 beers for $12.
And for those who don't know, a flight of beer, like a little series of tastings of beer. As you can get a flight of wine. Eric Miles, where would you go and find beers from all around Melbourne?
Other than the places already mentioned, there's places like Slow Beer on Bridge Road, which is and Two Row Bar on Smith Street. They're both good bottle shops as well as drink in. So that's a good way to get some.
And I think that's
home.
Sort of a good question to go in and be able to do a little tasting in a retail premises and then buy what you want to take it home and enjoy it with whatever you want to enjoy it with.
That's right. And some of those bigger beers, you almost want to be drinking them at home because
you want to be lying down.
Pretty well cut by the end of it.
You don't want to be catching a tram home after a big beer.
No.
Dan, where would you go? Apart from the aforementioned places by whom you are employed.
One of the most incredible places to enjoy craft beer is straight from the brewery.
Mm-hmm.
You go to Mountain Goat on Wednesday and Friday. You go to Moondog Friday and Saturday. You can go to Two Birds and Thursday.
I think if we can allude to the question of the beers from all around the world, I don't know how many beers Moondog has from around the world. They may be influenced by...
We do actually have guest taps from breweries that we've done collaborations with.
Yep.
We do have a bit of a variety from around the world. Mm-hmm. New Zealand being almost a different country.
Yes,
and,
you can almost places. Swim there.
Yeah.
Tristan, I hope we can we've answered that question for you. My personal recommendation is to find an independent retail liquor outlet. I certainly won't promote anything that is a supermarket chain, but go to an independent bottle store near you and see if they can if they haven't got what you want to try, get them to start talking about some of those things that you want to try, so that you can get more and more of these international craft beers into Australia, and certainly get them tasted in your local bottle shop, because if you don't know they're there, neither does anybody else.
Mm-hmm. Mm. But of course, I'd like to promote the local stuff first.
Yeah. Of course. And look, the craft beer industry, you know, there is an organisation, the CBIA, the Craft Beer Industry Association. They are incredibly smart in driving craft beer. We make, there's a whole bunch of microbreweries across Victoria, from Beechworth up in the northeast to, you know, places that are down the road to the two brothers down in Cheltenham or Moorabbin, you know. And you know, everywhere in between. There are places to go and explore what craft beer is. And everybody, I think, would have a different, like with wine, a different palate, things that appeal to them very differently. Mm. Luke, you're furiously nodding.
Well, sorry, I'm just agreeing with what you're saying. Everyone does have a different palate, and it is hard to know what people are going to like. People come from wine and they think, oh, I'll start with something easy drinking, and they get themselves a, you know, a 5% light ale, and they just think it's close to just what I've been drinking anyway, so it's not that exciting. But if you give them a Black Lung, suddenly it's, wow, this is completely different. This is new to me. Now I'm interested. One of the best bit of advice I can give to people is team up with a few different mates and say, spread out, get some beers, come home, and we'll have a tasting.
Well, it's almost like getting people to bring wine to your house, you know, we're going to a restaurant that is BYO, and we all have to bring some wine, and we all need to bring something different. I'm going to arrive with a Grunewald Lina, somebody I know is going to arrive with a bottle of Sauv Blanc, with which I will hit them over the head. but you know, they're as you say, palates are different, and so if we're planning to a food match, so let's assume that I'm having a barbecue tomorrow, and I'm going to just grill some fairly simple, grill some steaks, throw a bit of lamb on the barbie, maybe some chicken on a stick or something like that. You guys are invited. What are you going to bring? Go on.
No, well,
Eric, you're bursting to tell me. Go on. Moondog.
No, I won't be a brand specific. I'll stick with the styles, but yes. It's pretty easy to match a lot of beers with a lot of different foods. It's pretty simple stuff. Mm. You're drinking, but if you want to match something to the, again, like I was saying, either compliment or contradict the age old thing. But maybe something with a steak and a pulled pork, like an American brown ale or something, mm-hmm. with a bit of depth and a bit of malt and a bit of, and then the chicken, maybe something a bit lighter. But it's all pretty straightforward.
For the uninitiated, how am I going to know the style of the beer? And what the flavour profiles of that style. So you mentioned American brown lager. How do I know what a brown ale? What is a brown ale?
Yeah, well, I guess that's the other thing. The beer styles, the what defines different beers has been really altered over the last sort of 10 years.
There are essentially four different styles. So there's an ale, a lager, a pilsner, and
ale, within the umbrella, there's ales and lagers. There are two different strains of yeast strains that operate at different temperatures. And from that, there's a family tree, which becomes all kinds of things. There are some crossovers that are kind of confusing in between ale and lager, but basically they're defined in those two categories and then various categories from there. And the Pilsner being a lager, one of the lighter end of the spectrum, going all the way through to stouts and imperial stouts. And
which are an ale.
Yes, exactly, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So
it's look at me here. Doing my Oprah shake.
Yeah. And there's beer styles like India Pale Ale, which is
a lot of what people are drinking. I'm hearing that a lot, that Indian Pale Ale is, you know, the shiz at the minute.
IPAs are huge in the US, and obviously we follow that model. And these are IPAs that are different to the original English version of the IPA, which was designed to travel to India in barrels and yada yada yada. Now it's all hop driven, with these new world hops being those proprietary hops you mentioned earlier.
And I was talking about Enigma being one of the proprietary hops that is most enigmatic as far as I'm concerned. HPA, the Hop Producers Australia, who farm here in Victoria and in Tasmania, producing some of the finest hops in the country, indeed I think the finest hops in the country, for creation of craft beer and big beers as well, but it's a very interesting world. I didn't know that proprietary hops existed. It's quite an alarming thing. If you had to choose a particular style, we're sending you to a desert island, you had to choose a particular style of beer that was the only thing that we could get to you, Dan, what would it be? What's your go-to, day or night? I want a beer. Is there a particular style or type of beer that you would drink?
Yeah, so I would go amber ale. Amber ale. Obviously, with I think my beer selection comes down to the weather. It was something that I came over here, obviously having the Sonalwood Pacific Ale for the first time when it was 45 degrees outside, was quite a nice treat. in the winter, something like the Mountain Goat Sherfoot Stout, something that's really going to warm you up when you sit inside. But yeah, I'd have to go
with an amber
with
ale.
A nice amber
kind
ale.
Kind of in the middle there, cover all bases.
Yeah, exactly. That's my plan.
And Luke, what's your go-to? What's that thing that...
I'd probably agree with that. Amber or sort of an English pale 5%. Nice and gentle, maybe 4% actually, so I could drink it all day. Or Belgian sour beers are my thing.
So Belgian style.
Yeah, so really sour.
I'd probably have to say a hoppy pale lager, something akin to a Love Tap double lager from Moondog Brewery.
Right, indeed. Have a bit of a thing. I'm probably an anomaly and need to be hit about the head or something, but I have an aversion to wheat beer.
Right.
I really like wheat beer. I like its texture. I like the flavour.
Banana-y instead of clovey fennels and
because I'm not a big beer drinker, so if I do drink beer, it's good. I think it's wheat beer.
Yep,
and it does beautifully in the weather, like hot weather as well.
It's the only time I have a beer is when it's hot.
Yeah,
I can't possibly think of drinking beer. So not when there's the world full of red wine that needs to be consumed. Another question that I generally ask my chefs, but I'm going to put you boys on the spot as well. We work in an industry that does demand late hours and some bad habits, and we have a secret shame, and you can turn this into an alcohol secret shame if you wish. Normally with chefs I say, you know, what do you eat when you go home at 1 o'clock in the morning? You know it's bad. I've had all sorts of things from a can of baked beans to a toasted cheese sandwich. Guy Grossi always, you know, quickly whips up some pasta, you know, makes it from scratch at 1 o'clock in the morning. Who does that in their home? But good on you, Guy. So is there a secret shame, a commercially produced beer that you secretly drink when no one's looking? Luke?
No, not at all.
No?
I just don't like them. They don't taste good, so I don't bother.
So is there a secret shame of any type that you don't...
Maybe a bag of chips every now and then. That's about it, though. I'm pretty boring.
completely normal. Eric, is as somebody who is a bit of a beer aficionado, is there something you sneak out and have when no one's looking that you're ashamed of?
Oh, not ashamed at all, but at the time and a place for every beer, and I've enjoyed many a delicious can of Melbourne Bitter in my day, and I continue to.
A tinny of Melbourne.
Yes,
fantastic.
Let's go tall neck on the Melbourne Bitter.
Yeah.
I love a long... That's what my dad used to drink when I was a kid. Long necks of Melbourne Bitter.
Yep.
Dan, is there something that you discovered that you could be ashamed of?
I am craving one of the most massively produced beers back home called Molson Canadian.
Right.
And it is the equivalent to Carlton Draft, and I would
is there not, you can't find one of those in Australia?
No, unfortunately not. So it's the same thing with like Foster's, so no one really drinks it in their home country. So
right.
Yeah.
I also have a secret beer shame, which is Corona. Very, very hot day. Very, very cold beer. Fresh lime. It's just there because it's refreshing.
The lime's there so that you can't actually taste the beer, which is fantastic.
Yeah. And I remember being in the States and buying a six-pack of Corona for like $5 or something. It was ridiculous.
No, I used to buy 2-litre bottles for $1 in Mexico.
Oh, see, that's a beautiful thing. It comes the time in the program, the last 3 minutes, where it is time for me to sell my soul and ask our guests to give us a bit of information about where you can find them. Luke, we'll start with you because yours is a blog and a podcast.
Aleofatime.com is the easiest place to find me. Or on Twitter at Ale of a Time. Everything's on there.
Excellent. Eric.
Yes, so Moondog Brewery, moondogbrewing.com.au. We are in 17 Duke Street, Abbotsford.
Yes.
Just up the road from the infamous Duchess Brothel and round the corner from Spa Guys.
Ah, excellent. And I'm sure people can find your beverages in those aforementioned retail liquor outlets.
All those wonderful independent places, yes.
And Forrester's Beer and Music Hall. Is it correct?
Completely correct.
Excellent.
Yes.
Dan, where can people come and find you and check out your dimples?
Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all on Forrester's_Hall.
Forrester's_Hall and at 64 Smith Street in Collingwood.
You got it on the corner.
Anyone who's ever been to the bar called Barry, I'm just having a little lament here. I've spent many a dangerous hour at a bar called Barry late at night because it used to be 80s music.
It's really nice to watch people walk through the door and kind of go, wow, look what it's become. And they end up staying for 3 or 4 hours, which is wonderful.
Well, there is nothing wrong with that. One final question for each of you. Tomorrow is the day we celebrate fathers, stepfathers, fathers-in-law, grandfathers. And we've got to stop on the way home and get a six-pack for the non-experienced beer drinker, but something that's nice. Luke, what are you going to stop and buy?
Mountain Goat Hightail.
Mountain Goat Hightail?
Yep, nice amber. Easy drinking, delicious.
Excellent.
That was going to be mine.
Eric, apart from Mountain Goat Hightail?
Well, I'm going to have to go ahead and do the blatant plug and say Moondog Love Tap Double Lager in a 4-pack.
Excellent.
And then I'm going to have to go Feral Hop Hog Citrusy IPA. That's
what is it? What?
Feral Hop Hog. It's from Western Australia.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Just something different than we have at home. My dad would love it. So.
Excellent. A quick nod or a quick affirmation. Does water make a difference to the quality of the beer?
Yes. Of course.
A huge difference.
So Tasmanian water is apparently good because it turns ugly people into good-looking people.
It doesn't quite work in the Yarra, unfortunately.
No.
Most breweries treat their water as well, so they might add
something
to alter
the pH. Very good, guys. Thank you so much for coming and joining me and enlightening me a little bit more about beer. Of course, the podcast will be available later in the week, and you can stay in touch with all of our podcasts from some of our very international, famous international guests too. Three boys sitting in front of me. Famous international guests.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.